Needle 4.
When the Germans came in, the leaders were rounded up and shot. How we learned that they were shot is simply that because in Polish there's a word called Hitzel. He's the man who looks after the necker's yard. When a horse died or cow died and it was not safe to eat the animals, it was taken to the necker's yard and he buried them there. And then suddenly people were rounded up to dig out the bones and load them up on carts. And those who came back said, you know, we had to put them in a ditch where so-and-so were shot. And the chief of police was shot. The priest was taken out, was shot. And they didn't take my brother because Schlamek came from Wrocławek to live with us. Pecho didn't return. And various Jewish young people were taken out and shot. And suddenly we found out that one of the leaders of the German community became Mr. Hoffmann. And the house which belonged, the most imposing house, which belonged to the corn merchant Krzyzewski, was quickly renovated, and there lived the Sturmbannführer. He was the head of the gendarmerie. Things happened very quickly. The young Germans who went to our school, Szkoła Powszechna, were conscripted and they were trained by him. And I was taken to him by Mr. Hoffmann. And Mr. Hoffmann told him something, and then Mrs. Hoffmann came in. And then Mr. Hoffmann said to me, this is Romek, and he's going to work here and bring pigs will for your pigs in the morning. He will come every day at 5 o'clock in the morning, and then he will clean the boots, which will be put outside. And this Sturmbannführer's wife, who had 3 children, the youngest one was about something like 2.5 or 3, looked at me up and down, and I stood there to attention, and she said, do I understand German? So I said, I understand, but I don't speak very well. My parents do, and they speak Russian and Polish and Yiddish. So she said, I'm not interested in that, but do you speak German? Do you understand me? So I said, yes. So Mr. Hoffmann said, oh, yes, he understands things quickly. And this is what you have to do, and every day you will come, ask your parents to get you a yoke to carry the buckets. And this would be pig's will, which would be kind of buttermilk. So I said, yes, I will do that. And I started working for this Sturmbannführer. I had really nothing to do with the family. In the morning, I would take the pails and go to get the pig's will. And as I came back, I used to see these young Germans from the villages and from our town being trained by the Sturmbannführer. They would run and do exercises, and he taught them songs. And when they saw me, he would stop them and say, you, go and hit him. So I had to put this down, and he would hit me, and I would fall over. Although I worked for him, things happen every day. We had to have star. We couldn't walk on the pavement. We had to walk on the road. And people started disappearing. One day, the Sturmbannführer's wife said, you must come this afternoon. I'm going to send you on a message, on an errand. So I came back, and she gave me a piece of paper and said, you have to do what I tell you to do. What you have to do is, you have to go to this village in the direction of Izbica, give it to so-and-so on this farm, and they will give you various things which you put in the rucksack, and you return tomorrow morning before lunch. So I did this, and I told my parents I have to go on this errand. And when I they put me in a stable where the horses were, and there were rats there. Anyway, I lay on the ground. I was afraid that the rat would sort of bite my ear off, something like that, because they ran about. And the following day, they gave me something to eat, these people, and they put various fowls and various other things into their rucksack. It was quite heavy. And I had that piece of paper which they tore off, and the rest they gave to me. And it said that I must not be stopped, that I have to take this to the Sturmbannführer. And I set off, and on the way back, I heard shooting. So I was fascinated by it. So I cut across through that forest because I knew this hand like a palm of my... I mean, you knew this place, palm of my hand. Because when my father received coal, and that had to be unloaded once he paid quickly so there's no theft, he used to send me to these various farmers to collect this. And they used to come with a cart and horses, and they received so much money by going the 6 kilometers to the station. And the wagon was unloaded and bring the coal back. So I knew all these people by name. Also, their son used to attend the same school, so I got to know them. And our Povshechna, Shkola Povshechna, had about 700 pupils. It was huge. And because one lived in that community, one knew these people, and some of these farmers' children used to walk about 3-4 kilometers to school and walk back. And used to walk barefooted and put the shoes on by before the school, not to wear out the soles. The same happened on Sunday when they used to go to church, because that shoes were precious. And so I cut through the certain part where I heard the shooting, and there was a ravine. And I came up to the edge of the ravine, and I looked down, and my Jewish friends were being shot. And the people who were doing the shooting were the ones who were being recruited by my boss, by the Sturmbannführer. And all the gendarmerie people were dressed to the hilt. And then they had these funny heads before the stuff came. And all the young recruits had these uniforms. And a shoemaker had a son and a daughter. His name was Chaim and her name was Chaya, because they were twins. And they were taken against one mount, and he didn't want to let go of the daughter, so the Sturmbannführer said, crush his skull. And so they crushed his skull, and I saw all this, and she screamed, and they dragged them both and placed them there, and they shot them. I was quite paralyzed by this. And these were my contemporaries. And that happened so early. You know, 39 still. And I suddenly realized that if I'm caught there, I'll be shot straight away. So I crawled from bush to bush and eventually sort of made a loop round and came back with the rucksack and gave it to the Sturmbannführer, the wife, this sack. And I went home, and I didn't want to tell my parents. I just kept quiet about this. And these children didn't come back, of course. And then they selected other people, thinned out other people, that I discovered after the war, that they send them to Chełmno to dig the ditches and to bury the dead, which Chełmno was one of the first extermination camps, and we were in this region of Chełmno. And that life became worse and worse. We were evicted from our house. We were given just 2 rooms. Everything was taken away. And because of Mr. Hoffman, my father was protected. My brother was taken away to work on that Hermann Göring Berlin-Posen line. And he had by then a wife and a child. And the wife lived with us, and the child was called Danny, Danush. And he was about four. And he was then the same age as Jürgen, the youngest one of the Sturmbannführer. And Jürgen, when he woke up early, he insisted on coming with me to get the pig's will, and he would be given a piece of cheese there. And sometimes when I was given a piece of cheese, I kept it for this Danush to bring it to him. And these children were so similar and looked, you know. And I kept that secret fully within me. I did not want to disclose, but it gave me nightmares for quite a long time. And then news came that my brother Schlamek was hung. He was, because being strong and as potential leader, he was leading a group of workers, and he smuggled himself out in order to get food for them. And when he came back in, one of the German supervisors saw him and wanted to take the sack away, and my brother struggled and hit him. And of course, he was hung. And because he was so tall, he touched the ground with his feet, so they restrung him again and hung him again. So my father was shattered by this news. And one could see that the sort of life went out from his eyes. And then, in addition to this, before he was hung, we heard at the very end of 1939 that my brother, who was the communist, who was in Breza Kartuska, was conscripted, together with his cousin from Izbica Kujawska, who was also called Icho, Isaac. And they were taken to the Polish army to fight the Germans. And they survived. And my father, when he heard the news, wrote him a message saying, go to our cousins in Warsaw, because as a Jew and a communist, you will be shot. And I sent Zosia along. She was 39. So she was then 18, with clothing stuff for you and your cousin, and make your way to Russia. So Zosia went along there, and they met up. And he and his cousin, Isaac, same age, made their way to Russia. But they didn't take Zosia along. They left her. And she was in Warsaw Ghetto, and she couldn't come back. And we used to send her parcel to Warsaw, till such time when we were sent to Lodz Ghetto. And then after the war, I found out what happened. This cousin survived. But when they came to the border of Russia, both of them, because my brother was a communist, he received a piece of paper, and they traveled on the train to Moscow. And when they got off, KGB waited for them. They took them to Lublyanka prison. They were both interrogated for 3 months. And because my brother was a communist, he was shot. And my cousin, because he was not a communist, just the son of a bourgeois who had a sawmill, he was given 4 years hard labor, and he went to lumberjack in Finland. And then when the war started with Russia, he was given another piece of paper, and that said, you have to make your way to Manchuria, close to the borders of China, somewhere up there, far off. And they were given salted seal and salted fish. And my cousin ate a bit too much, and he was delirious on the way. Eventually, when he came up there, there was a very simple selection. They were all lined up by the Russian, and they were said, they were asked, those who can read, one step forward. So he stepped forward. Those who can write, one step forward. Because my cousin was very lucky. He went to the Jewish gymnasium in Włocławek. And he was made head of a hospital, local hospital. And there he met his future wife, who never saw a Jew in her life. And then when he survived after the war, he brought her over to Poland, and then they went to Israel, to Palestine. She's there now in Rishon LeZion. Marusha became Miriam. And only recently did members of her family come to visit her to Israel after so many years from this far off place. And they have, my cousin has two girls and one boy, and they are all married now, and they have children, and he's a grandfather. And he's now about 83 or so. Just a minute. He was born 1920. So what would he be?
He's 70. 1920, that would be 76.
76, yeah. Mm. Yes. But he went through quite a lot. How he managed to get out is also very interesting from the point of view of this sort of thing. He learned very quickly that in these remote parts, when somebody comes to you, a stranger, you mustn't ask him what he did, who he is, how he is. Because if they suddenly call you and interrogate you and torture you, you give away the secret and you're a collaborator and you suffer with him. So one day when he came back after collecting medicine for the local hospital, and he collected it on a horse, somebody knocked on the door and he looked at him. This fellow was tall, didn't have Mongolian features. And this chap said, I'm passing through this town. Can you put me up? I just need bedding down. I'll be off tomorrow morning. So he said, yes, come in. So he said to him, my name is Yori. Yitzhak became a Russian Yori. What's your name? So he said, I'm Yori too. So they shook hands. And he said, are you hungry? So he said, yes. He said, well, look, I'll put the soup which I have on the stove, and here's a piece of bread. So this fellow ate. In silence, they didn't talk. And he lay down and slept. And the following morning, my cousin Isaac had to go and deliver the medicine to various local hospitals. And his horse was an ogre, a stallion. And sometimes the stallion had tantrums. So he went in to settle him, and the stallion stood up. So he knew to leave him alone for sort of 10, 15 minutes and come back. So he came and said, look, before you leave, do you want some more soup? So he said, but you were supposed to have gone. So he said, but my stallion has a tantrum. I have to leave him for 10, 15 minutes. He said, come, I'll show you how to deal with a stallion who has tantrums. And they went out, and he had a slight limp, this Russian. And he said, listen, this horse knows me and does that. He will kill you. Don't go in. So he said, don't you worry. And he went inside and got hold of the stallion by the soft of the on the chin, squeezed it and said, "Rah!" And the stallion suddenly started shaking, and he let him out as if it would be a little kitten and jumped on him without even putting the muzzle on or saddling, and drove him up, turned him around, brought him back, and jumped off. And he said, saddle him, he won't give you any trouble. So he said, I was absolutely astounded when I saw this. I saddled him, I said, Yori, thank you, and drove off. He said he served his hard labor. He was already married. His Marusha was pregnant when he received the notification that his hard labor has been extended by another 4 years. And he said, I was desperate. I knew that Poland was occupied by Russians, freed, so to say, and I wanted to get back to see who survived my family in Izbica Kujawska. So I decided to saddle my horse, and I went to the main county town. And as I drove there, I saw a very high-ranking, tall officer. But what was strange about him, he had a slight limp. And as I passed by, I looked at him, and that was Yuri. He was head of the KGB in the whole area. So I went and said to him, help me. This is what happened to me. He said, all right, leave this paper with me. You get it cancelled. And he managed to cancel it. And so he left. He said, it was such a stroke of luck. Can you imagine lingering in these parts for another 4 years, hard labor? So he said, we got out very quickly and got to Poland. And when I came to Izbica Kujawska, and I went to see what happened there, and I was told that everybody was taken to Chełmno extermination camp, I thought, I must get out. And then something quite strange happened. He wrote to my aunt in Switzerland. And my father, before he died in Lodz Ghetto of starvation, called me and said, my sister, your aunt, lives in Lausanne, 9 Chemin de Cedre. And when you survive, if you survive, remember, get in touch with her. So I memorized this address. And I must skip certain things now. When I was in Lodz Ghetto, Szlamek, my uncle's son, elder son, also a very strong, tall fellow, was sent to Lodz Ghetto in 1943. He was head of a group of Jews who were doing slave labor work, and he was the man fully in charge. And then he decided to liquidate that group or dissolve it, and before they sent them anywhere, they sent them to Lodz Ghetto. And this was always pasted on a wall, the newcomers to Lodz Ghetto, whether they came from Germany, from certain towns, or from other places. And on the list, I saw Szlamek Halter. And I knew that my brother Szlamek was there, that he was hung. So it could be only that one. And when I came to see him, I was a staff corpse. The biggest part on me was my body. I was so skeletal, so thin. And he was a true human being, still vital, strong, big. And he took my head in his hands and said, Romek, what have they done to you? And we both sat down and wept. And then he said to me, it's an extraordinary thing that is happening to us Jews. I don't know whether I will survive or whether you will survive, but I'd like you to remember something if you do survive. My youngest daughter, I have one daughter, I gave her to a woman near Posen in such and such a village. Her name is also Danusha. And this woman is looking after her. If anybody from the family survives, I would like her to be brought up by the family. And next time I saw him, he said, I'm going to be head of a kitchen, soup kitchen, in Lodz. And you come to me every day and I'll give you extra soup. That was fantastic. And for 2 weeks he was head of the kitchen. And then the inner group of Lodz Ghetto decided to get rid of him. That was simply that he had to pay them so much in valuables in order to get this position. And so they bundled him off to Chełmno together with some of his colleagues. It was a sort of a terrible ploy. And when I survived, I heard from my aunt that his brother is alive. I wrote to him in Poland and sent him also from my pocket money soap and stuff. And I said, this is what your brother said, and his child is with this woman. So he went and collected the child and took her to Włocławek, where he lived. And this woman came back 2 days later and stole the child because she found, she was so keen, she had boys but she had no girls, that she felt that it's her own child. And it took him another 2 weeks before he managed to locate this woman and get the child back, and took her with him to Israel. But the extraordinary part is that when I saw this Danusha now, who is a grandmother herself, and I said, it was so lucky that Isaac found you. So she said, no, he did wrong. I never knew that I had a father, that I had not a mother. I was positive that this Polish woman, although I was barefooted, looked after geese, was my mother. And when he took me away and told me that story, my world was shattered. I couldn't orientate myself. He should have left me, because in her way she loved me, and I thought that she was my mother. And that was 50 years later. So we come now back to the beginning. In 1940, suddenly we were given so many hours one evening to get ready, because we are going to be sent somewhere. And we had to pack up whatever we could carry, and be ready 5 o'clock in the morning. Now, Uncle Ignaz and Auntie Sabina with Misha managed also to get across to Russia, because he was a communist, that's the musician, and his wife. And before, that was fairly soon after the Germans enter. And I had no sort of idea that I will never see them again, or I will never see my cousin. And they left, and we had still letters when they reached Kiev. And they spoke about the life in Kiev. And they were shot in Babi Yar during the great massacre there. When we were told to report in our marketplace with our bundles, Mr. Hoffman played a great part, and he came and he said to my father, I am sorry, I am a German, I am very much for Hitler and everything, but if I could only spare you, I would have done so. It's not up to me. Is there something that you left behind that you still want to get? So my mother suddenly thought, eiderdown, because we have to be warm, and we had this goose eiderdown. So she said, you go, Romek. And he sent to the guard to let me through. And I went there and got this eiderdown, and my mother told me to put it in a sort of a big pillow, stuff it in as hard as possible. And as a child, I remembered that on Shabbat we used to make cherry wine, and the sour cherries were eaten with meat. And I loved them because they were slightly intoxicating. And in our storeroom in the basement, which was a sort of concrete thing because there were no fridges, it was a cool floor. There were these huge jars with the cherries. So I went in and I drank some of that wine. And I got some of the cherries. And on the way out, I also took a big bag of beans, like kidney beans. But there were white ones. I don't know what you call it, cannoletti. So I had this container of cherries, eiderdown, and the beans, and I came back running for it. And I must have been slightly tipsy. And when the carts took us to the station and they put us on the train, I was quite certain that they are going to take us to a ravine and shoot us, just the same as I have seen my friends. I fell asleep, and I was sitting next to my grandfather. And when I woke up, I said, are we going to heaven? And my grandfather said, carry on sleeping. It's all right. It's all right. And when we came to Lodz Ghetto and the train stopped, the ghetto was so overcrowded then that they didn't want to take us in. And we stood there, and then one third of us were taken in, and the rest were turned round to be put back on the train. And by that time, the town of 800 was about something like 360 from the transport. the 360 were depleted from the 800. That's the remains, because the young Germans who were law-abiding citizens suddenly became trainees, SS trainees, and they were given experiences into shooting, and Jews were used this for their training, how to shoot them and kill them. And it was so done so quickly that the colleagues who were school colleagues who went to classes with my sister suddenly became taught how to murder and how to kill.